I don't know about you, but I am always, almost always up for a little vacation.
Course.
Rachel just got back from some days
Indeed.
off. I'm thinking about trying to take a weekend here or there. It's not impossible if you find the right fare online. You could negotiate to leave work early on Friday, hop on a flight to some big city, spend a few days, be back at your desk Monday morning. No biggie, right?
Well, yeah, it seems that way, but all that rushing around can take its toll on a person and on the environment. Our next guest decided to ditch airport security altogether and see the world from the hump of a camel, the bridge of a cargo ship, and the seat of the bicycle, just to name a few. He did it at least partly to promote the so-called slow travel movement. His name is Ed Gillespie, and he's on the line now from South London, where he recently returned home to after 381 days on the road. Hi, Ed.
Hi, how's it going?
It goes well. Welcome home.
I know, it's slightly disorientating, but I'm back now, finally.
Oh, I imagine. So you were, I mean, you were everywhere. Europe, Mongolia, Japan, Australia, French Polynesia, Mexico, Central America. What in the world triggered this idea?
Well, I mean, it was kind of, we always had this aspiration to travel, my girlfriend and I, to go on a big trip. But because of all the work that I've been doing on climate change with my company, Futera, I really didn't want to do it in a kind of high carbon way. And it's also, so as well as the climate change reason, there was also a reason of adventure, because it's actually pretty easy to twang yourself around the world in a plane these days. Most countries are quite accessible. But if you forsake planes, then there's a whole new adventurous element which returns to travel, where we're going over land and traveling through countries rather than just over them.
And we should say that your company, you're a co-founder of an organization called Futera, which does communication strategies for sustainable development, companies that are interested in doing that. So this is something that's, it's an intrinsic part of your life. You spent 5 years saving up the money. You say you went with your girlfriend. You traveled, I mean, all different ways that you wouldn't even think of. Banana boat, bicycle, buses, cargo ships. What's your favorite? What did you come off of this thinking, you know, there's nothing like a good cargo ship?
Well, I mean, it's a very different experience. I mean, obviously, you're on a working vessel, and these things are absolutely vast. The biggest one we went on was 215 meters long, 30,000 tons, you know, and you're hanging out with a working crew. So there's a whole bunch of Ukrainians and Russians and Filipinos, and, you know, you're not being waited on hand and foot. There's no terrible cabaret like you get on a cruise ship. you literally eat with the crew and make your own entertainment. But there is something incredible about being on a ship in the middle of the Pacific when you know that land is 2,000 miles away in all directions.
How would you... Go ahead, finish.
No, so it's just quite a humbling experience when you get that sense of isolation and vulnerability, actually, because it can be quite scary being at sea.
No, I can't. I can imagine. I mean, there are so many fears I would imagine you have. There aren't all the buffers that you have if you're on a cruise ship or something that's geared towards travelers. How did you even secure a spot on a freighter? How does one go about booking a seat on a cargo ship?
Well, believe it or not, there's a couple of specialist travel agents around the world, and we use a guy called Hamish Jameson in New Zealand, and he's an ex-merchant seaman himself, and he runs this specialist agency to actually sell cabins on cargo ships. And so he has about 400 ships on his books, which go on various routes around the world, and obviously wherever there's trade taking place between countries, there's cargo ships, because that's the way that most of global trade takes place, is by sea.
Now, your trip was all about measuring your carbon footprint. I mean, this is something that's important to you, and this was the impetus for the trip. Do freighters and cargo ships have smaller carbon footprints than cruise ships?
Well, this is quite difficult, because it depends on how you measure it. Essentially, actually, shipping by sea is incredibly efficient per ton of cargo shifted over a unit of distance. And so, in actual fact, because I'm only about 100 kilos, you know, sticking me on a cargo ship is fairly negligible when the thing weighs 30,000 tons. So if you like, the additional fuel to drag me across the Pacific is quite minuscule. That said, global emissions from all shipping are actually on the increase. That's because global trade is increasing. So there is a bit of a dilemma here about how you calculate the carbon footprint of it. But under current kind of recommendations, we're doing it pretty efficiently. And if you actually work out the carbon emissions per unit of weight moved over per unit of distance, it's about 500 times more efficient than flying.
So, Ed, I'm curious about something about vacation, which I love when I travel or you're a visitor to an odd, strange land, is you just want to get there. You're so excited about the travel and the trip itself. What kind of internal conversations did you have to have with yourself when you knew, you know what, I'm just not going to get there for a week?
Yeah, well, I mean, this is a key thing. I mean, the journey is the reward. And one of the things we're trying to challenge is that notion that the vacation or the holiday only begins when you arrive at your destination. And actual fact, the transition of landscape, culture, people, language, cuisine, all the different things that you experience en route are actually part and parcel of that experience. And what we were trying to do is encourage people to try and savor the actual movement of travel and the actual journey itself, rather than just simply see it as a mechanistic way of getting from A to B.
Was it always fine for you, though, or was there ever a point where you just thought, I am over it? I mean, I just want to get there. And then how do you take yourself back and say, no, I'm going to look at the ocean. I'm going to read a book.
Yeah, it took us 16 days to cross the Pacific. And on around about day 13 or 14, we were like, get us off this ship. we have had enough. We want to feel solid rock underneath our feet. You know, we're bored of all the crew. We talked endlessly with them. They're all bored of each other because they work six-month contracts. So they spent 6 months at sea with each other and have talked about everything they can possibly talk about.
Yeah.
You're sick of the food. Then it does get a bit testing. But the way you deal with it then is just say it's only another 48 hours.
Yeah.
The wonderful thing about being at sea is, you know, you do make your own entertainment. And we learned Spanish crossing the Pacific because we were going to Central America. We play an enormous amount of table tennis. I'm actually a brilliant table tennis player now, which I never was before I left. I can speak a few words of Russian from hanging out with the crew. I know.
So you made the most of the time. But it really is about time, right? I mean, you spent 381 days doing this. If I'm just regular old Rachel who doesn't have a whole lot of vacation time and I want to take a weekend somewhere, how do I scale this idea of slow travel to a quote-unquote real kind of life where you don't have a whole year to do this?
Yeah, okay, if you're time limited, this is the practical consideration. I mean, the key thing then is to keep your travel more localized, you know, and actually look at places right underneath your nose in your local area where you won't have enormous amounts of travel time in a different way. And I think we very easily overlook the things which are right on our doorstep, and we're always keen to fling ourselves to far-flung destinations without actually looking what might be right underneath our noses. And certainly, you know, I've met loads of British travellers as we were going around the world. And, you know, you bump into these people in New Zealand and they say, oh, yeah, I love New Zealand. It's beautiful. And you say, have you been to Scotland? Have you been to Wales?
Yeah.
You know, have you been to Cornwall in the southern England? And they're like, no, I wanted to come to New Zealand. And so they're on the other side of the world and they've maybe missed out on some equally beautiful things which are right underneath their noses.
Which is kind of the opposite of what globalization has done. I mean, it has technology and planes. You can get, you know, to New Zealand in a day. And so your message is then explore locally first, perhaps.
Explore locally. I mean, it's very much borrowing the inspiration from the slow food movement, which is about, you know, extensively farmed food, you know, organic farming, local food production, seasonal food production. And it's maybe looking at what lessons that then has for travel. And so should we explore things locally? Should we try and adopt a kind of holiday mindset in a more immediate area, rather than just think that the only way we can really escape and get the benefits of travel is by going a very long distance?
And lastly, you're working on something called a slow travel manifesto. What's your message in there?
Well, the message is to try to understand what is the purpose of travel? What are we trying to get out of travel? And is it about a checklist of sites that we want to go and see? So we tick off Eiffel Tower, we tick off the Leaning Tower of Pisa, you know, we tick off the Forbidden City in Beijing, and then we're satisfied that we've done our checklist.
Oh.
Or is it actually about the notion of just getting away, and can we experience that notion of getting away in methods which don't have the same kind of environmental impact that unfortunately flying does?
Ed Gillespie on the line now from South London, where he recently returned to his home after spending 381 days along with his girlfriend on the road, not on planes. Hey, Ed, thank you so much. We appreciate it.
No problem at all. And I'd say if anyone wants to read more about the trip, it's all at www.lowcarbontravel.com.
There you go. We'll link to it on our blog as well. Take care.
That's great. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Bye-bye.